Thank you, Rob, and good afternoon to you. This Sunday is Remembrance Day. There will be ceremonies across the country to honor Canada's veterans. This hour, we are asking you, who do you think of on Remembrance Day, and what does it mean for you? I'm Michelle Elliott. Welcome to BC Today. Well, this year is also significant because it marks 100 years since the end of the First World War. To mark the anniversary, a new toonie has been issued by the Royal Canadian Mint. It features a bright scarlet poppy at its center with the word armistice. It's being marked in other ways as well. We received this email from Susan in North Vancouver, and she writes, there is a cross-Canada program of the federal government and the Royal Canadian Legion, whereby churches, which still have bells, can ring them 100 times starting at dusk on November 11th. We have a bell, and we will be ringing it 100 times starting at 4:35 p.m. on Sunday inside a service. Thank you, Susan. And yes, the Royal Canadian Legion and Veterans Affairs Canada have been encouraging legions, churches, spiritual centers, and community centers to take part in the initiative called Bells of Peace. They are asking Canadians to ring or play bells at 5-second intervals starting sunset on Sunday. Well, this hour, we are asking you, how do you mark Remembrance Day? Who do you think of, and what does this day mean to you? Around the province, you can give us a call, 1-800-825-5950. In Metro Vancouver, 604-669-3733. On your cell phone, star or pound 690. You can also tweet us at BC Today, or you can email us, bctoday@cbc.ca. I have two guests joining me this hour to take your calls. Jim Kempling is a retired colonel in the Canadian Armed Forces. He was in the military from 1961 until 1988. He's a PhD student in the History Department at the University of Victoria and the project manager for A City Goes to War, which is an online archive that researches Canadian cities during for the First World War. And Jim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for joining us. And Mark,
I'm delighted to be here.
Mark Campbell is a retired major who served in Afghanistan in 2002 and 2008. He's one of more than 2,000 soldiers who were injured during that campaign. Mark is involved with the Equitas Society that organizes the Walk for Veterans and was behind a class action lawsuit against the federal government on payments to injured veterans. And Mark, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Michelle.
Thank you for joining us as well. It's great to have you both. Jim, tell me about your interest. We're talking about the First World War. Your interest as a history student. What are your thoughts as we mark 100 years since the armistice?
Well, people here kid me that I'm the oldest grad student in history. that's the history department, of course, not world history. My interest is obviously piqued by my service, but also my grandfather served in World War One, and I was given his diaries when he passed away. Didn't talk about it during his life, but I now have diaries that he wrote in virtually every day that he was at war, and they're quite fascinating to read.
And what has led to your studying, your studies of history then? Why were you interested? Your service and your history with your grandfather are involved, but what led you to actually becoming involved with A City Goes to War?
Well, I started to go back to school as a retirement project to keep the barnacles off the brain, so to speak, and got hooked on it. So I've been teaching young history students how to build websites as part of the history project, and that led naturally to the City Goes to War, merging the interest in having students being able to use websites for history and my interest in the First World War.
Why do you think it's important to learn that history and to keep an archive of it?
Well, you know, every November the 11th, we say, lest we forget, but so often we really do forget. I mean, things like 100 years ago, if Canada had had a racist capital, Victoria would have been a contender, and Vancouver certainly would have been a close second. We tend to forget those kind of things because they're uncomfortable. How were we treating First Nations people during that period, and why in British Columbia did they choose not to enlist in significant numbers? Again, the type of question we try to forget. How come we were enlisting boy soldiers as young as 14 years old in World War One? I mean, the traditional story is they lied about their age, but they really didn't. You can see the papers that they signed up on, and they said what their birthday was, and the medical officer describes them as appearing to be 14 years old, and the commanding officer signs it off. Why were we doing that kind of thing?
These are difficult questions, to be sure. And Mark Campbell, I'll talk to you about that. Some difficult issues. You served in Afghanistan in 2002 and 2008. You were severely injured during your second tour. And since then, you have been involved in fighting for veterans' rights. What do you hope, what are those difficult issues you hope Canadians think of on Remembrance Day?
Well, I mean, my concerns are obviously a little more contemporary than perhaps your other guests, but certainly, you know, a lot of the same difficult questions apply, not necessarily with regard to who did or did not join or serve, but certainly difficult questions surround the way Canada treats its current generation of veterans, those post 2006 who are subject to the so-called New Veterans Charter as opposed to the former Pension Act. And it is a difficult question. Why has Canada chosen to deliberately reduce disability compensation by 40% in the middle of the war, treating some soldiers with the same injuries with one set of financial compensation and other soldiers with far, far less? You know, that's a difficult question, and I would throw that one out there because that one is real and it's happening today as we speak.
The federal government now is reinstating lifetime pensions as opposed to lump sum payments. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct, Michelle. Unfortunately, what the Minister of Veterans Affairs refuses to acknowledge is the fact that the new pension for life is significantly less generous than the former Pension Act. So there's no parity in terms of the national sacrifice of today's veterans. If you were injured before the April 1st, 2006, you get one compensation package, which tends to be reasonable and, you know, reasonably generous. And then if you were injured after the 1st of April 2006, you get another package to include this new pension for life, which is significantly less generous. And how can you have two soldiers who served in the same war with the same injuries have two significantly different outcomes for their families in terms of their financial compensation and the means they have to live on?
So for regular Canadians who are wearing their poppies, what would you like for them to think of on Remembrance Day?
Well, that's a great question. I guess all I would ask the people of Canada to think of on Remembrance Day are the current day veterans, in addition to our historical veterans, you know, World War One, World War Two. Those who have passed on, whether they passed on during their service or have passed on since due to old age and injuries accrued. You know, I would ask Canadians to think of the plight of the current day veteran, because in some ways it's very similar to the plight of the World War One veteran when they came home and had to fight, unfortunately had to fight their own government for their due. Yeah.
My guests are, go ahead, Jim.
I absolutely agree with that. And my regiment, for example, the Princess Patricia's on November the 11th is marking the ceremony at the Afghan Memorial here in Victoria, something that the PVCLI Foundation has played an active role in establishing here in Victoria. Unfortunately, it's one of the few that's around in Canada. But my regiment contributed an awful lot to that conflict, and many of the wounded are members of my regiment, and the regiment has chosen not to go down to the legislative lawns, but to do our remembrance at the Afghanistan Memorial.
That's Jim Kempling, who is now a PhD student at the University of Victoria and the project manager for A City Goes to War project that researches and archives Canadian cities during the First World War. He's a retired colonel in the Canadian Armed Forces. Mark Campbell is a retired major in the Armed Forces as well and served in Afghanistan in 2002 and 2008. We are asking you who you think of on Remembrance Day and what this day means for you. How do you commemorate it? Around the province, 1-800-825-5950. In Metro Vancouver, 604-669-3733. And on your cell phone, star or pound 690. Brian is calling us from Maple Ridge. And good afternoon, Brian.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to say that from my Remembrance Day, I try to do it all through the year. With the BC government having the license plates with veterans out, I've been doing it for at least a few years now, where I've actually walked up, if I see a license plate, walk up, first thank them for their service, that what they're doing that most Canadians can't or aren't able to do, and then also try to get a little background story with them to get a little more information about exactly what they had to go through and just things like that about the wars.
And why is that important to you, Brian?
Well, as immigrant parents and just in general with how, the sacrifice that you have to go out, there's people that have chosen to go and defend their country and know that what they're going into, and the fact that they're doing that to protect the country will protect me and protect everyone else is very important, because obviously if they weren't doing it, then who knows what would happen. So it's one of those things that they're protecting not only me, my family, and everyone else in the country. And it's protection, like I say, like police officers and stuff, it's not to the same extent, but it's still important to make sure that they're known and appreciated.
Brian, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Jim Kempling and Mark Campbell, what are your thoughts listening to what he had to say there, the efforts that he's making?
I'll jump in there. It's Mark speaking. And by the way, Jim, we serve in the same regiment, so VP to you. But, I think I applaud Brian's initiative in trying to extend Remembrance Day into his everyday comings and goings. I think that's really important. I mean, for me, I look down, I don't have any legs, so for me, every day is Remembrance Day. But for your average Canadian, you know, we tend to have that focus around Remembrance Week, which is wonderful. And don't get me wrong, I think it's wonderful that our country acknowledges veterans and present and past and what they've done to build Canada, but I really do applaud Brian for his initiative in extending Remembrance Day into a daily event, because I think that is really important.
And Jim?
Yeah, one of the things that is available now to people is Library and Archives Canada. You can go on their website and do a search and get the entire personnel file of every soldier who served in World War One, and this includes medical records. So if your great-grandfather lost a leg, if your great-grandfather suffered from influenza or shell shock or any of that type of thing, it is all there. And it gives people a much more intense perspective of what the impact of war is. And so often the ceremonies that we go through kind of tend to disguise that a little bit. If you look at the war memorial in front of the legislative lawns and look at the face of the soldier, it's not a young, heroic image. It's an image of a grizzled old man. And there's a lot of that type of thing that people create in their own mind, the image of youth and heroism and all that kind of stuff. And it's easy to forget about the grim reality that is so painfully obvious to people like our other guest.
Mark, tell us more about the injuries that you did sustain and what you live with now.
Michelle, I lost both legs. I was essentially in an organization called the Operational Mentoring Liaison Team, and I was leading a group of very brave Canadian soldiers well outside the wire, as we put it, those doing combat operations. And we were essentially training the Afghan Army on how to conduct combat operations, providing them on-the-job training, if you will. while we were actually fighting the Taliban at the same time. So it was a day like any other. We were conducting a dismounted foot patrol, a clearance operation into villages, using with the Afghan soldiers, allowing them to plan and lead the operation, and using the opportunity to search for weapon caches in these nearby villages where we'd had some problems in the past. And it just so happened another Canadian organization got into trouble to one side of us, and we were the only show in town to go rescue essentially a Canadian sergeant who had been shot and was going to die. So we dispensed with our deliberate plan and went into a hasty operation to rescue this particular individual. And partway there, we were ambushed, and part and parcel of that ambush, to initiate the ambush, what the Taliban forces would do if they could is initiate an improvised explosive device, create a big explosion, hopefully catch somebody in it, and that creates shock and confusion and smoke and dust and all kinds of chaos. And then they hit you from multiple sides with rocket-propelled grenades and machine guns to try to finish the job. That's essentially what happened to us. We managed to turn the tables on them pretty quickly and gain the upper hand, but the damage was done to myself and to a lesser degree to four others that day. So it was quite a back-and-forth gunfight, and over about a two-hour period, I guess, to get us back to where we could be evacuated back to Kandahar by helicopter. So it was a bit of a running gun battle. A bad day at the office, I guess, to put it another way.
Oh, my goodness. That exemplifies very much what Jim was talking about, the grim realities. So what is life like for you now? I know you're involved with talking to other veterans. What is life like for you now?
Life's pretty good. You know, I'm not gonna sit here and moan about my particular lot in life. Things are good. I have lots of friends who help me do the things that I used to do. I just need a helping hand to do some of those things nowadays, like hunting and whatnot, fishing, the pursuits that I used to follow. So life is okay. You know, I'm involved in the advocacy part of it simply because I feel a responsibility to my fellow wounded soldiers who and injured soldiers in general, soldiers, sailors, airmen, airwomen. You know, we're all one big happy family, and some of them can't speak for themselves, and I just happen to be in a position where I can, so I have. So the advocacy takes up some of my time, but not a terrible amount, particularly now that the lawsuit has come to an end. You know, I'll continue to involve myself in pursuits like the Walk for Veterans, which started as a local initiative in Vancouver, but has spread nationwide, and we're trying to grow it even further still. So I'll still lend my name and my activity to those sort of meaningful and important events. Really, I try to live a pretty reasonably private life when I'm not doing the advocacy thing. You know, I have a wife and two children to look after, so they tend to take up most of my time, and that's probably where my time should be spent. So,
and
yeah, life is good.
You participated in the Walk for Veterans this past June, is that right?
I rolled, but I was there, and it was a good event in Edmonton here. We had a fairly good turnout. And we're hoping, we had quite a few veterans, but also friends and families, and we're hoping to get more members of just the general public out, people like Brian, your earlier caller, who's interested in veterans and military events and things like that, that, you know, would be great, because the Walk for Veterans is exactly that. It's a walk with veterans, really. It's an opportunity to stroll along and, you know, ask a veteran how they came to be in their particular place, whether they have an injury or not, or how their service went for them, or, you know, it's just an opportunity to pick a veteran's brain or multiple veterans. So it's a great event that we hope to grow.
Well, we are glad to have you both here with us this hour as we ask our listeners who they are thinking of on Remembrance Day and what this day means for them. 1-800-825-5950 around the province in Metro Vancouver, 604-669-3733, and on your cell phone, star or pound 690. We're also taking your tweets to @BCToday. And Jack's tweet says, "For me, it's extra personal. It would have been my grandmother's daughter's 101st birthday. She passed on Wednesday, survived by 11, 12 kids and hundreds of great and grandchildren. She always insisted her birthday celebration came after the memorials. We wear a poppy for her and all lost to us. An L tweet says, Grandpa, who was in the Canadian Military Engineers at Nemehan, and Opa was shot down. All the horses who served in the First World War and all the Indigenous veterans we are only now beginning to hear the stories of. And she writes, hashtag lest we forget and hashtag Canada remembers. Thank you for those tweets. And let's go to the phones. David is calling us from Vancouver. David, good afternoon.
Hi.
And how do you mark Remembrance Day?
Well, I mark it by what I'm doing right now. I was talking to you and looking at a white poppy in my hand. And the person I remember most, okay, first of all, I better qualify. I'm a barrack cat, barrack brat. And I was around the PPCLI, where my father was an RSM, for quite a few years. My sister, for instance, looks on my dad as a hero. And because we grew up in with two different fathers, the same person, but after a war, he came back to me or our family at the time. My brother had died while he was fighting in Korea. He came back a totally changed man. Other people see him as a kind, benevolent. I did see that side of him. I left home when I was 12. In fact, this coming Thursday, as every Thursday, I'm in therapy trying to figure out how come I was hated so much by him. And he was a changed man after war. And I've been talking to other people that, you know, I talk about their fathers with other people that are doing some kind of recovery from the disasters of war that came home to haunt us as families. And that's what I think about every Thursday. And I think about it on that particular day. All the people that have been injured, not shot and maimed and everything, you know, some of your guests are talking about. I care about that too, but the personal ones, like I guess stumble over. I don't know what to do about it. And I'm 76 now, and I'm still working through that crap.
David, I can hear it in your voice. Besides the therapy sessions you've been going to, have you found anywhere where you can get support from other families as well?
I don't know if there is that kind of thing. Like I said, I left home when I was 12, and I'd returned, I think, maybe for a couple of days over the years. But I've forgiven the guy. Like, I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. I'm still in that. What turned him around? Was it the carnage? Was it, I don't know. And yet, on the other hand, I should qualify also that he had a kind side to him. He'd take bugs and throw them outside. He loved animals and all that kind of stuff. But as far as, you know, me, when I was that young, I don't know. I mean, I'd get punched out by the guy. So I don't know where that, maybe my resistance. He wanted me to go into ROTP. Mm-hmm. ROTP. I said, no, thanks. I didn't want to do that. So there was a lot of resistance on my part to the military dictum that came through the families. You know, and it's rampant still. I've talked to other families, other kids. Actually, a couple of kids, not a lot, that still that kind of crap goes on. Even here in Vancouver, over at Jericho, it's an unseen, I don't know what you call it. The war still goes on in families about when they're, I'm just being too general.
I think you've summed it up there, that the war still goes on in families. David, I think anyone listening can hear the struggles that you've had and the inner conflict that you have as well with regard to your father. Thank you so much for calling and for sharing. And I do hope that that you're able to find some resolution as you attend your therapies and hopefully find some support. I'm going to ask my guests about that in the next half hour if they know of any support groups that you can perhaps turn to. too. Thank you, David, for calling us from Vancouver. It is 12:31, 1:31 in the Mountain Time Zone, and this is BC Today here on CBC Radio 1. And this hour, we are asking you who you think of on Remembrance Day and what this day means to you. 1-800-825-5950 is the toll-free line in Metro Vancouver, 604-669-3733. My guests are Jim Kempling and Mark Campbell. I'm Michelle Elliott. Thank you very much for joining us. And we are taking your calls this hour on how you mark Remembrance Day and who you think of and what this day means to you. Again, around the province, the number is 1-800-825-5950. In Metro Vancouver, 604-669-3733. And on your cell phone, star or pound 690. On Twitter, we are at BC Today, and by email, bctoday@cbc.ca. I'm joined by Jim Kempling, who is a retired colonel and the project manager for A City Goes to War that researches Canadian cities during the First World War. He's a PhD student at the University of Victoria. And Mark Campbell is a retired major from the Canadian Armed Forces who served in Afghanistan in 2002 and 2008. And welcome back to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'd like to go back to our caller, David, from Vancouver, who talked about the impact that his father's participation in the war had on him, very lasting impact that he still struggles with now. Can either of you comment on that and perhaps point him to some kind of support that's out there?
I'm not sure that I can point him towards any specific support mechanism. It's Mark speaking, but I can certainly co-commiserate with him to a certain extent. I mean, my family, the impact on them was huge, significant, devastating. I don't know. I'm at a loss for the right words. Both of my children had to seek psychological counseling for some of the fallout of my injuries. My wife was in the same boat. She ended up being so affected by my injuries and the devastation that was wrought on the family by my injuries and the fact that the whole domestic situation was turned on its head, and that she had to take on a whole lot more of responsibility that I used to carry within the family. I can tell you that It had a significant impact on her to the point where she could no longer function in her workplace and had to essentially retire early, that or face a mental breakdown, because she just couldn't be my primary caregiver and work full-time like she had and be a mother to two children. It just, the whole thing was just too much.
What's helped your family?
I can certainly understand where David's coming from.
What's helped your family, Mark?
Therapy and counseling, like David's been seeking for a long, long time. That's ongoing in some regards. Really, that and time. Time, in David's case, I'm sorry to say that, he's 76 years old, and time doesn't seem to have healed some of his wounds, as grievous as they are. For my family, it's been about time. I think it's 10 years now since my injury. You know, I've adjusted well to life in a wheelchair, and I think my being able to adjust to life in a wheelchair has helped my family overcome some of their concerns as well. But it's been a lot of work, and it's been a lot of it's been a long row to hoe. Let me put it that way.
Jim Kempling, what can you suggest perhaps as a way to find some support?
Yeah, I think the issue is one of the multiple generational impact of this type of thing. Mm-hmm. And governments historically, World War I, World War II, Korea, have always tried to limit their exposure. They think like a bunch of insurance agents. And it's only through constant pressure and constant work of people like Mark and ex-soldiers that go back and say, you've got to understand, you've got to listen. This is not something that you put a bandage on and a couple of weeks later, everything is okay and you can wash your hands and forget about it. It's not. And the story that we heard from our last caller is not unusual. This will
has a multi-generational impact. It's like the residential schools issue. It's not something that goes away, take two aspirin and come back in the morning type of thing that government very often would like it to be. We don't have to deal with any veterans of the First World War anymore. They're all gone. But we still do have these second and even third generation impacts.
We have a tweet from Addison who writes, "I remember my grandfather who served in the Second World War. He lost lots of friends, but never talked about it much. We would go to the local service and then go for a drink at the Legion." Addison, thank you for your tweet. At BC Today is where you can send us your thoughts as well and let us know who you're thinking of on Remembrance Day. Well, in some cases, a single family can lose several members during a single war. That was the case of the O'Keefe family in the Okanagan. And as we talk about Remembrance Day, we're speaking now with someone who has researched their history. Carla Jean Stokes is the curator at the historic O'Keefe Ranch in Vernon. And Carla Jean, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. Thank you very much for taking our call. We're talking about the First World War here. Can you tell us about the O'Keefe family?
Yeah, absolutely. So the O'Keefe family is maybe in a lot of ways very typical of families during the First World War, where several family members answered that call to go fight in Europe. And that included three of Cornelius O'Keefe's sons, one of his grandsons, and a son-in-law.
And so what are you learning about them?
It's so interesting because one son actually fell ill before he could even go overseas, and today he's buried at the ranch, but he's still considered war dead. So here at the ranch, we do have a Commonwealth War Graves Cemetery headstone for him. And then two other sons actually did survive the war, and one may actually have suffered from one or more stress injuries or maybe something similar to what we would today diagnose as PTSD, but it was never diagnosed at the time, and perhaps he never got the treatment that he deserved. And then finally, Cornelius O'Keefe's grandson was actually an indigenous man from the Sioux Nation from the head of the lake, and he unfortunately died during the Battle of Amiens in 1918, so we're just past the 100th anniversary of his death, and that's somebody that we like to commemorate here.
And what would you like people to think about as we mark the 100 years since the end of the First World War?
I think what I found learning more about the O'Keefe family history and their access points into the history of the war is if you can find ways to seek out these stories, find people that you can relate to in some way, learn their story. It's that human interest and that connection, and that's how we find resonance with our history. And so we don't want to think about it in big numbers, like that over 66,000 people served and died, or that over 500,000 or 600,000 people answered that call. We want to know who is that individual, what's his name or her name, and where did they serve, what was their experience like, do we have photos of them, and can we connect to them on some very human level, and that's how we'll always find a connection to our past.
And you have been collecting photos from people as well, haven't you?
Absolutely. So we had an exhibition this year for our 2018 season called 1418, The First World War Illustrated. And we put out a call for community members, really anywhere, but mostly from British Columbia, to send in stories and photos. And we had about 15 families send quite a few photos, and it was really wonderful. So we went through all of their service records, and we got these photos, and we really were able to put together a few stories of the people that fought, and it was really wonderful and rewarding to learn more about these individuals, and it's really all over the map. Some people survived, some people didn't, and it was just wonderful to connect with all of those families.
What does this mean for you personally, Carla Jean?
So I've been a historian of First World War photography for years and years now, so it's really wonderful to bring in my own personal interests to my workplace. But for me personally, I love everything about First World War photography, and so that's been really great. And when I think about Remembrance Day, I really connect with those First World War photographers who went out and they were armed with a camera and not with a gun, and how did they experience the war, and having to really look at what was happening and experience it, and the things that they would have seen would have obviously been terrible, and how did they internalize that? That's what I always think about.
Well, I appreciate you taking our call. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Carla Jean Stokes is the curator at the historic O'Keeffe Ranch in Vernon. Let's go back to your calls now. We're asking you who you think of and who you remember on Remembrance Day, and what does this day signify for you? Let's hear from Keith, who has been waiting in Kelowna. Good afternoon, Keith.
Good afternoon. Yes, I'm the military historian at the Okanagan Military Museum. Hi, Carla. How you doing? I had her invited her last week to come down and talk about her photos
uh-huh.
to our museum members. A couple of things I wanted to touch on briefly here on a personal level as well as an institutional level. In regards to the veterans not talking about their experiences to their family members and so on, a great book to have a look at is Ted Barris's Breaking the Silence, Vets Untold Stories from Great War to Afghanistan. Because there's some, not only is there universal truths within the historical record, but there's also universal themes within service life history. And the experiences that they had, the things that they were burdened with and brought home, how that rubbed off on the family, as one of your other listeners was talking about, it certainly permeates down into secondary and tertiary levels, two or three generations, as we've mentioned.
Mm.
From personal experience, my father was a 20-year Armored Corps warrant officer. He was, when I was 6 months old, he was over in the Sinai on the Gaza Strip with Lars Trask on his horse, driving the jeeps around the desert, keeping an eye on the Bedouin tribesmen in the area and looking for any infringements on the Israeli-Egyptian ceasefire. And prior to that, he had already done his Germany service with NATO, with the Armored Brigade, with the Royal Canadian Dragoons. And he finished up his career with the 8th Canadian Hussars in Petawawa. Fortunately, we didn't move around very much. But I really didn't understand the challenges that our family had faced in those years. I'm the youngest of four. Until I read the book, Hurry Up and Wait. I forget what the subtitle is, but it's related to Canadian service wives and families. And it's looking at the 60s through to about the 80s, I guess, of what were the challenges that went into moving the family around, dealing with these absences of the father in on exercise or out on operations, and in more recent years, several deployments, one behind the other.
It's called Hurry Up and Wait. Pardon me, it's called Hurry Up and Wait, an inside look at life as a Canadian military wife.
That's right. Another website I would highly recommend is She Is Fierce. She is a service wife of a Lord Strathcona serving member and a very strong advocate, a well-connected advocate for military service families, past and present, and has some great blogs on her website or on her Facebook. And those sort of themes resonate with me. As I say, when Dad would come home from exercise, yeah, it was great, Dad's home. And then overnight, the rules had changed. It was no longer mom's set of rules and what we could do with that. And all of a sudden, we had to tighten up our tidiness and our manners and stuff like that. And it was all for the good. We were very fortunate. I think we had a good childhood. And my father was certainly challenged with being able to switch off the sergeant major on the job versus the father at home. But we really didn't understand it at the time. And I believe my siblings have fought with some of those consequences in their lives, as I have. The other point I want to make, if I could, Michelle, is talking about the remembrance practices within the community, and in our case in the Okanagan, with the Okanagan Military Museum. Currently, I'm standing in a vestibule, which probably echoes too much, of our museum, because there's a school group from an elementary school inside learning about empathy. And so some of our school programming is looking at the Wait For Me Daddy photograph and other photographs that we have on display and encourage the students to put themselves into the photo or into the situation and try and empathize with the people there. And that's going to, I think, is going to be a strong method going forward as we finish up with the First World War. What's Remembrance Day going to be like in 3 or 4 years? Well, when these youngsters, I think it's a great 4 class, when they hit their teens, what are they going to be thinking about? And is it going to resonate with them in the future?
What are the themes?
We're trying to lay down that foundation to keep the themes of remembrance in place and growing for the future.
Really important important message, Heath. Thank you very much. I know my children are participating in Remembrance Day ceremonies at their school as well today. And those are some important themes. Empathy, thank you so much for calling in. And the book that you referred to earlier was Ted Barris's Breaking the Silence, for anyone who's interested. Appreciate the call, Keith, in Kelowna. Thank you. Well, another important day was marked yesterday as well. It was Aboriginal Veterans Day to recognize First Nations, Inuit, and Métis veterans who have served or are currently serving in Canada's Armed Forces. A ceremony was held in Vancouver, and the CBC's Rafferty Baker went down to the parade in downtown Vancouver. He met with Indigenous veterans David Ward and Charles Davey. Here's part of his conversation with them.
I'm Corporal David Ward. I served at the 1 Battalion Royal Canadian Regiment in Wolseley Barracks, London, Ontario. They moved us to Petawawa. I served 2 tours in the United Nations, 74, 75 in Cyprus, 75, 76 in Egypt and Israel. That was back when we weren't allowed to shoot back. It's a different United Nations patrols now. I have an honorable discharge. I have PTSD from the incident in Cyprus. And we helped set up the National Aboriginal Veterans Association, which led to having our Aboriginal Veterans Day parade. Winnipeg and Vancouver are the only two cities that let us march down the main street. We're having problems back home where I'm from in Grand Prairie, Alberta. People are complaining that Aboriginal veterans should not have their own day of recognition, which is pure prejudice as far as I'm concerned. We served throughout for Canada and its people, not the government. Governments come and go. We will always continue to serve, and we don't have to. It's in the treaty right, but we protect Canada.
Hello, my name is Charles Davey. I'm from Prince George, British Columbia. I joined in 1972, Princess Patricia Canadian Light Infantry. Then I went to Europe, Cyprus, the Middle East, and I had a good time. Knowing my Métis heritage, I have to represent our people, and I carry the flag in the parades. It's kind of an unwritten duty that you show up on parades and you represent the veterans, past and present, and the serving members. It's just an honor to be part of.
Those are veterans David Ward and Charles Davey, who were at a parade in Vancouver yesterday to commemorate Aboriginal Veterans Day. We have an email from Darlene, and she writes, "Each year I think of my grandfather who served in the Army in the First World War, who was wounded at the Somme and among the dead and dying for 3 days. My father who served in the Navy in World War II, and my father-in-law who served in the British Army in World War II." Darlene, thank you for that email and sharing who you're thinking of this Remembrance Day. Let's go back to our callers. Linda is joining us from Victoria. And Linda, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, please.
Okay. I called in. I've never called before, but I remember my uncle who was killed right at the end of the First World War. And recently, I was in Ottawa, went to the memorial chamber that's in the Parliament building, and I given them my address, and they ended up sending me the pages of the memorial book.
Linda, I'm sorry, your phone is now cutting out. Can you continue and tell us a bit? I hope that the connection improves.
Can you hear me?
We can. Please continue. I hope it was cutting out a little bit there.
Right.
So okay.
I'm in a garage in Victoria.
I'm glad you called in, but I hope that we can hear you better in the next couple of seconds here.
Okay. So I was sent the pages from the memory book, and I have that beautiful, and I put Polly on the border, and I also with my uncle who was killed in the First World War right at the very end.
And was he in that book?
Oh, yes. So okay. Things are in the book in alphabetical order per page every day. And you can actually be present the day that okay. The pages return to your relative.
Oh.
And
Linda, I'm so sorry. It really is cutting out. But what we're hearing is that you're thinking of your uncle who died in the First World War, and you received illustrated pages of soldiers who died, and you've been able to recover some photos, including your uncle. That's what I gleaned from our call with you, Jim Kempling. Can you tell us a little bit more about what we do know, and what families who would like to know more about their relatives, where they can go?
Yeah, it's really quite remarkable the amount of information we have about soldiers in the First World War. Canada probably has more complete records than any other country on earth. You can go online, and it's got a great long URL, but the easiest way to find it is just to Google soldier search World War One Canada, and it'll take you to Library and Archives Canada website, and you can find the entire personnel file of your relative who served in World War One. It's like 20 or 30 pages of documents that have been digitized. So you'll be able to see the papers that they signed when they joined up, and it'll include birth date, next of kin, how tall were they, what was their complexion, did they have any tattoos, what religion were they, a great deal of information. And then the whole file, including pay records, medical records, discipline records. If dear old great-grandfather was thrown in jail for stealing the sergeant major's horse, it's there. If he was treated for venereal disease, it's there in black and white. So it's really a very, very rich resource for trying to get an image of an individual.
Okay.
The other place you can look at is a website called the Canadian Great War Project, which has a much better search capability and uses that underlying database. The University of Victoria has recently taken over responsibility for that site.
Okay.
And is really enhancing that search capability. So you'll be able to look for underage soldiers who came from Sault Ste. Marie and that type of thing.
Let's try to get in another caller here before the end of the program. Heather is on the line in North Vancouver. Hi, Heather.
Hi.
Hi, who do you think of?
Well, I think about my father-in-law, Zygmunt Ehinger, and his brother. His brother didn't come back from World War II, unfortunately. He's buried in Monte Cassino, but where we're from in Manitoba, they name Northern Lakes after fallen soldiers, so they're is an Ehinger Lake, and I just really, really am so proud of my father-in-law and just the sacrifice that they made for our lives.
Heather, thank you very much. I can hear the emotion in your voice. Thank you for calling in.
I really miss them.
You take care.
Thank you.
Karen is calling us in Penticton. Karen, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just want to remember my two great uncles who died in Flanders in the First World War. My granddad fought, but he came home. So his brothers, Stephen and George, did not come home. They were from London, England. Stephen was married with two young boys. One of his boys signed up for World War II, and he didn't come home either. I just find it very tragic to think that my ancestors lived through this, and I just never want to forget them.
Karen, thank you for sharing and remembering them here on the program. One last email from Loretta, who writes, my husband continues a history of anxiety and depression that can be traced at least partly to his grandfather's experience in the First World War. I just wonder how many generations must suffer. We are creating a new generation as we continue to send youth to war. We must figure out how to make world peace without sending people to war. Loretta, thank you very much for that email. And Mark Campbell and Jim Kempling, I really appreciate your joining us for this conversation. And thank you both for your service.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Mark Campbell, retired major from the Canadian Armed Forces, served in Afghanistan in 2002 and 2008. And Jim Kempling, retired colonel and a project manager for A City Goes to War that researches Canadian cities during the First World War. And that is it for our program here today on BC Today. My thanks to everyone who called in and who wrote us an email and wrote us some very thoughtful emails and tweets as well. Thank you. And you can always reach us, BC Today at cbc.ca and on Twitter at BC Today.